Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Misconceptions of toxic ingestions and what they get into. That's going to be the topic because we've never talked about this on the Vet Blast podcast. And I can't think of anyone better than a board certified veterinary toxicologist and on our editorial advisory board, Dr. Renee Schmidt is in the house. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. How are you today?
Always good to see you. And I'm always learning from you and your friends at Pet Poison Helpline guide us so well with so many great cases. And to the listeners, we were talking about this offline. This is something that we've developed through email, Renee and myself. And I said, you know, just as a general practitioner, sometimes I figured like, do we need to induce vomiting? When do we need to do it? So we're going to dive in on some misconceptions. So let's start with the first one. Speaking of vomiting, is it safe to induce vomiting on certain ingestions or toxins? And that, I think the more critical component is too, like, when does that matter?
Yeah, you bet. I think it's a really common question and a really common source of confusion for veterinarians, because a lot of times people think, well, if they ingested it, let's get it out. We want to get it out because we don't want to have any issues developing. And in some cases, actually, we would rather it pass through the intestinal tract. So when we think about corrosive products like our toilet bowl cleaner or our drain openers, when an animal gets into some of those types of things, we have a lot of concern with causing ulcerations to the esophagus. And there's not a lot of things we can do to help protect the esophagus, but we can do more for the intestinal tract. And so we don't want to induce vomiting. We don't want that to come back up. We want to allow it to pass through. And then we have to think about the brachycephalic dogs or the dogs who have the pets who have mega esophagus or laryngeal paralysis. We want to be really careful with whether or not we should induce vomiting in those particular patients. And in many situations, they may have gotten into something they shouldn't have, but the dose makes the poison in toxicology. And so it's something that they may not actually need to have vomiting induced. We may not need to lower that exposure.
Yeah, it's a great, great call out. I'll never forget when I first started practicing. Of course, I had a dog that ingested, I forget how many milligrams of ibuprofen, and it was a dog with mega esophagus. And so we were just like, no, let's not. Let's contact, of course, you know, Pet Poison Helpline and see. And then, you know, we were able to let things ride out with GI protectants along the way. So that's a really, really good reminder to the listeners about those maybe comorbidities that they have going on.
Great.
What about the big one that I know I hear about in lecture is activated charcoal. Is it safe? When to use it? What are the indications?
Yeah, I always like to say activated charcoal seems to be one of the most polarizing topics in toxicology. Some people love it. Some people hate it. I think there's a combination of maybe misunderstanding and misuse. And I think if we respect the reason why activated charcoal can be helpful and is used, and not just give activated charcoal to an animal that ingested anything, then that certainly still has its place in toxicology. There's even been comments where human toxicologists don't use it anymore. However, if you go to a human toxicology seminar, they talk about using activated charcoal a lot. So it is still being used. And the neat thing about activated charcoal is that what it tries to do is it tries to adsorb, or it kind of works like a magnet. It grabs all of these different toxins that are in the intestinal tract, and it holds on to it in the sense that then it can hopefully rid it from the body. So it minimizes the absorption of the toxin, so the body's absorption of the toxin. And there are some things that we know it doesn't work for. I always tell people that the down and dirty is go into the grocery store and walk through the cleaning aisle. The cleaning aisle is not activated charcoal isn't going to work there. Go to the alcohol section. Activated charcoal isn't going to work there. But go to your over-the-counter medications. Activated charcoal works in a lot of those cases. It works for your supplements like vitamin D. It works for ibuprofen, for acetaminophen, aspirin, a lot of those things as well. And if we were to just take the approach of don't give activated charcoal, we don't need to do it, we actually could really be causing more harm than good. There's always that risk of hypernatremia with activated charcoal. So at Pet Poison Helpline, we never make the recommendation to give it without at least giving sub-Q fluids, IV fluids if they need to stay in the hospital. I'm of one belief where I don't think you can just put a dog in a cage with a bowl of water and they'll intuitively go to it when they're nervous in the hospital. I think about my dog who wants nothing more than to get out of the kennel. If she's in the clinic, she is not going to go to that to maintain and regulate her sodium on her own. So we like to do a little bit of fluid therapy to help with that.
Love that. And along those lines, another misconception is that all toxin ingestions need to be hospitalized. Now, some of these can be done outpatient-wise and maybe through a consultation potentially as well. So, share with the listeners a little bit more about that.
You bet. I always say treat the patient, not the toxin. And so while we may have, let's go back to ibuprofen, where we could have a patient that potentially has a risk for GI ulceration or acute kidney failure, we also might have an ibuprofen ingestion where that patient is not at risk for acute kidney failure. And so what I think is really important for us to remember is that it's very difficult to black and white toxicology. And it's very difficult to put an algorithm towards toxicology. You have to really look at all of the situations that are there. And there are many cases where amphetamines, for example, amphetamines, we really don't expect to see any laboratory changes. And so doing a lot of blood work for these patients isn't necessarily helpful for them or helping you as a clinician either. And sometimes these patients maybe would they benefit from IV fluids? Sure. But if we have a cost issue, a financial concern, or just an ability to keep them in the hospital, maybe the animal's extremely aggressive in the hospital, then maybe sub-Q fluids would be warranted and valid in those cases. And then there's also medications that we can give them at home that the pet parent can give by mouth. And so instead of having them in the hospital getting injectables, if they're not chronically vomiting and the all factors are okay, then they may be able to be treated at home.
That's so good to hear, really is. And along those lines, another misconception is that all toxin injections need to have laboratory diagnostics done.
Yes, and that's a big misconception. And we get calls on that. It's not uncommon for us to say we don't need to do XYZ lab work, and the person on the other end of the line says, okay, I'm going to do a CBC, a chemistry, and a UA. And there are many things, as I mentioned, like with amphetamines, we don't see those particular changes. We don't typically expect to see red cell, white cell abnormalities, or any other type of organ dysfunction. These are usually cardiovascular and CNS stimulants. And so lab work isn't going to really help us much. We see this a lot with our anticoagulant rodenticides, where someone may say, well, I'm going to do a clotting profile, and this just happened 2 hours ago. We got to slow down and think that it actually takes time for that process to work. So checking a clotting profile now in an animal that isn't actively bleeding is really not doing, is doing a disservice to that pet parent because of the financial constraint that gets added to their, the burden that gets added to them. Plus, it just adds more stress to the patient by handling them, manipulating them, and trying to grab that lab work.
I love that we're talking about this. And listeners, Renee and I were talking offline about this, about spectrum of care. We know it's a very hot topic. And if you understand the toxins, so it's so important to really sit in continuing education to really know the why behind the medicine and the toxin ingestion. Because exactly what Dr. Schmidt's saying, we just assume, even when I started practice, we just kind of random, like almost all the same, the way they got ingested for whatever they, got into. But now, the cost of a consult is one thing for a pet owner to do. And then they come in, and it happens to us a lot where they say, oh my gosh, I just, had this, had the consultation. I only have maybe $200 to do. Now that we know these things, that you say, hey, you may not need to do blood work on this and can treat outpatient with sub-Q fluids and maybe some inducing vomiting. Tell us a little bit more about that because it's so important for the pet owner to contact Pet Poison Helpline, but within reason with spectrum of care. So what does that look like?
Yeah. So, Adam, there have been many times where we have been able to either keep the pet at home and not need to seek veterinary care or minimize the amount of treatments that they have. Because, like you said, and when I was in practice before going into toxicology, something came in, it had ingested something. Gosh, let's get it out and figure out the why or what we need to do next afterwards. And whereas if they have that guidance from our toxicologists at Pet Poison Helpline, we can help to determine, yes, this is an issue. This is specifically the treatment that we need. Step by step, these are the medications, these are the drugs that needs to be given. Whereas sometimes if we kind of go, I say go rogue, we go on our own, we're busy, right? There's every exam room is full. You've been dealing with 20 different types of issues with these animals. And so you're just kind of in autopilot wanting to get things in and out. And so maybe you do reach for that CBC chemistry UA because that's what you're used to for that ADR patient. Or you automatically reach for that emetic and then activated charcoal when maybe that animal didn't need any of that to begin with. And so while we do have to charge for our services because we receive no government funding or outside resources, Pet Poison Helpline has really strived to always be, for the last 22 years we've been in business, to always be the most cost-effective poison control center in North America. We continue to be that today, and we recognize that cost is a concern, but it's also something that we can say, let us help you say this is exactly what the patient needs to avoid unnecessary charges to the patient and to the owner, as well as just unnecessary stress.
Yeah, I mean, we have the financial stress, we have emotional stress. I mean, I never seen a toxin ingestion where they're just like everyone's super chill. So it's
Right,
always,
right, right. And I always say, don't let that pet parent's panic become your panic. We have to be the voice of reason. And I think that's what's kind of nice when people call us, we can be that calm. We're not in the chaos right there with them. We're here sitting and we're thinking through. We're able to have that logical moment because there aren't 20 things circling around us. And so we can be that voice of reason for you and your patient.
And exactly what you said too, Renee. I mean, it's so true. You do have 10, 20 cases going on. And sometimes you run the CBC chem just because you run it and it gives you pause so you can go on another case, you know? But when you have somebody such as yourselves that are helping us and be like, here's the basically the recipe that you need to do for success, man, that is like a huge home run for us, you know, because it's like, okay, this is what we need to do, get you in and get you out so we can safely take care of you and move on to patients that might be more critical than what we anticipated. So it's a huge help to have that, you know, third party outside to kind of help us out.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And it isn't uncommon for us to receive calls from very well-intentioned, very logical, educated veterinarians who they call us kind of after the fact. And they call us, they say, well, I thought I could handle this, but now this case is going really south. And here's what I've done, and here's what's happening. And it isn't uncommon for us to ourselves looking like, okay, well, we probably shouldn't have done that. We probably shouldn't have done this. This didn't need to happen. This wasn't helpful. And so again, getting us involved right away at the very beginning, it can help put you into this ease of mind saying like, okay, I just need to check these boxes and do this, and I know that I'm on the right track.
Because when you call initially, you have the case number, and then you can call back again to follow up to see, you know, what else is going on, or maybe to your point, the case went south and you just need some extra guidance along the way. So it's almost like, you know, literally having a toxicology mentor guide you through these cases, right?
Absolutely. We're available 24/7, and that $189 US consultation fee, it works for any follow-up that you need. And if you've managed a cholecalciferol case or a vitamin D3 symptomatic case, it's not uncommon for us to talk to you 10, 20 times, and that's all included in that one fee.
Do you hear that, listeners? All included. So make sure you definitely take advantage of that. And then, you know, what I love what you guys do as well is you educate the pet owners because obviously they can call too. So you have those both sides of the profession. And I think it's fantastic because for, you know, when I do social media and we've done videos together before, they always resonate with pet owners. Their intention is always so good. They want to learn. They now know, I would say they really are good about like the grapes and raisins and those kinds of things. But the ones that did you knows, you guys puts out such great content on social media. I applaud you for doing that because it just kind of helps elevate and educate the pet owners from their side of the exam table. So I think that's great. Have you noticed that? I'm just curious, over the years, have you noticed a change with pet owner education on that?
I have, and it's great that you call that out because I always say animals are animals, people are people. Even the most conscientious pet parent, something's going to happen. Somebody's not going to be thinking. They're going to leave medication out that they normally put away. Something the pet's going to be exposed to something in the environment. And so our goal is exactly what you said. It's to educate the pet parent so that they recognize that something is not right, that they recognize that the pet got into something they shouldn't have. Because the wait and see approach doesn't work for toxicology. We don't wait, somebody may say, oh, he's kind of not been feeling well for a few days. He's vomited for a few days. I'm just going to wait and see how he does before I take him into the vet. When we do that in toxicology, it could have fatal consequences. Or it could double or triple the charges that are there. So the education that we're able to do, and absolutely, I've seen a huge change where people have said, I saw this and I recognized it right away. I knew it was bad. So I'm calling to see, what do I need to do next? As opposed to, well, somebody told me this was bad. The people who are calling, they're recognizing it themselves because they are being educated.
Yes, I love hearing that. I have a neighbor at the timing filming of this podcast, listeners, where it's around the holiday season. So a funny story, but it's just good because my neighbor is so educated now. So she's got family over and she has a Labrador Retriever, but she had something embroidered on her collar that says, "I'm a counter surfer. Don't let my eyes fool you."
That's terrific. I love it.
Because I mean, many of you tune in, that, they give you this look. You have family coming over and they want to, get into anything and anything possible. So it's just always, it's good to know that this owner is educated enough to know, like, to avoid certain things. So that just warms my heart knowing that we're moving the needle in the right direction.
Absolutely. Saving lives one pet at a time.
Absolutely. Dr. Renee Schmidt, where can we learn more about Pet Poison Helpline?
You bet. On our website, petpoisonhelpline.com. You can also find us on social media. We're always having different tips and
Yeah.
educational sources for you there.
Speaking of that, listeners, please share it. And because I do practice management and I go into these hospitals, like, I don't have time for content. Take their content. It's so good to share. It's so rich and it's very engaging. So just share it on your stories or share it on your website, Facebook page. It's already done for you. No point reinventing the wheel. It's there for you. And it's just a great way, resources. And it lets your community know that you're putting toxicology front and center, which is so important. So thank you to you and your team for putting all that great content out there.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing the information.
Of course. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. I hope this was very helpful, very different perspective of toxicology that we talked about today. We'd love to get your feedback on it. So definitely send us some comments or DMs on your thoughts on this podcast. Don't forget to rate it as we continue to grow. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.